Continuing Helen Wright's book, Humanity's Divinity. We need to follow the example of Bartimaeus in faith and persistence. Cultivate spiritual mindedness. Persistently declare the truth about everything error is lying about. And know that the declaration of the truth breaks the claim. Seeing spiritually, we recognize error's nothingness. We see sickness, sin, death as merely a lie about something true, a lie which could not appear unless there was something true and real to lie about. Everyone we meet or are conscious of when correctly seen is the Christ, is God in disguise. Can it be otherwise when God is all? Body, correctly viewed. In treatment, we must remember Mrs. Eddy's instruction to her workers that the body we now have, when seen correctly, is the divine and spiritual body. We must establish in consciousness the spiritual ideas which are the facts about our so-called material body and its functions. Every idea of mind, of spirit, of soul, of principle, life, truth, and love constitutes our body when our body is rightly viewed, because our present body is embraced in our mind. Man is the body of the one mind. Mrs. Eddy saw there were not two creations, a spiritual body and a material body. She proved absolutely that what appears as a matter body, when correctly viewed, is the spiritual body at hand. Quote, "Creation consists of the unfolding of spiritual ideas and their identities, which are embraced in the infinite mind, your mind, and forever reflected. If a thing exists humanly to us, it is because it exists divinely as fact. The divine fact or idea is all there is to the human concept." She urges, "Know then that you possess sovereign power to think and act rightly." When Jesus demonstrated this power, the people were astonished, for he taught them as one having authority. Mary Baker Eddy has taught us to do the same. She knew each one's individuality is God, and that there is nothing we desire, from the infinitesimal to infinity, that cannot be found within ourselves. The only place where any right thing can be found. Our mind includes it all. Jesus said to the man with the withered hand, "Stretch forth thine hand." All we ever have to do is stretch forth our hand, open our thought, and accept, because everything we could ever need and wish for, divinely, is at hand. Indulgence in material sense stops healing. Why do we so often fail in our treatments? It is not always because we anticipate a second cup of coffee with greater excitement than we do the second coming. It is more likely because the material sense of things seems so real, and we indulge it, wallowing in the gloom it brings. To cure bodily disorders, Mr. Eustace, in Clear and Correct Teaching, gives this hint on healing. Quote, "Remember, the only thing that stops you from making mind all in all is your indulgence in the human concept of things, in the finite personal sense of things. That indulgence stops perfect trust in God as all in all." Unquote. Mrs. Eddy defines your I on page 588 of the textbook as, "This I, capital I, is your divine self, which is leading your human mind out of these indulgences, out of the belief of being a separate personality apart from infinite good." The human mind is so occupied with the wrong teaching of the ages and its selfish indulgence of matter objects, the Antichrist, that it has not become aware of the real, omnipresent divine self. But through the divine authority brought by Mrs. Eddy's teaching, the spurious authority of the personality is being undermined and destroyed. We must learn what our temptations and errors are and seize the moment to battle down fear, impatience, frustration, anger, hurt feelings, and any other hypnotic shadow. Focus on the small stuff as well as the big. With axe in hand, challenge practices locked in decades of die-hard habits. To heal, we must prevent evil suggestions from entering our thinking and face the snags of dimly discernible, deeply rooted beliefs that are the obstacles to reform. Quote, "The warfare with oneself is grand," unquote. Through it, we mentally join ourselves to infinite good when we are conscious of our true self as the divine principle, love. It will speak through us words of wisdom. And love, the essence of this infinite good, will direct our lives. Mrs. Eddy taught us the life of love. If you love, you can raise the dead. Love will heal death. That is the way I have raised the dead, by love that is above the human. Her love included the whole universe, and when everyone in the universe was included in this love, there was no one to resist the omnipresence of present perfection. Mrs. Mims reports that in Mrs. Eddy's last class, she asked the students, "What is the best way to do instantaneous healing?" There were many answers, but when the students had given their answers, Mrs. Eddy said, "I will tell you the way to do it. It is to love. Just live love. Be it. Love, love, love. Do not know anything but love. Be all love. There is nothing else. That will do the work. It will heal everything. It will raise the dead. Be nothing but love." Be nothing but love. Mrs. Eddy knew it would not be easy. In my visits with Mr. Eustace, he told me that one of Mrs. Eddy's secretaries had on several occasions informed him of Mrs. Eddy's distress, almost despair, when she thought of what would become of the Christian Scientists when she was no longer here to continually rouse them to wake up and be active in truth. I heard the same report from Mr. Carpenter Sr. and from Mr. Tomlinson in my visits with them. Mrs. Eddy wanted us to be the voice of God, not just listen for God's voice. If we are, then never doubt that Isaiah's small and feeble remnant will prevail. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, wise, committed, truth-knowing citizens can change the world. It is the only thing that ever has. Chapter 8. Spirit shows us how to keep mind's idea pure. Growing away from error, we become pure in spirit. What did Mrs. Eddy mean with, "We must gain love and lose the false sense called love"? How do we achieve the love that is above the human, by which we can heal even death? The answer lies in knowing ourselves as spirit, at one with infinite good, and rejecting the original sin, the illusion of human birth, which clouds our sight and separates us from our true being as spirit. Mrs. Eddy tells us the time is coming when the spiritual origin of man, the divine science which ushered Jesus into human presence, will be understood and demonstrated by each one. Isn't this what Jesus meant when he explained to the woman of Samaria that the well of water was within her consciousness, that everything already is, so it can constantly spring up into everlasting life? Water is a symbol for purity, also for newness and renewal. The real man is not of the dust, nor is he ever created through the flesh, for his father and mother are the one spirit, and his brethren are all the children of one parent, the eternal good. That's from Retrospection and Introspection. Each one in reality is the Christ, the full understanding of God. To see through the nothingness of error, we must keep our thought pure. We have seen that in order to work out any problem, we need to turn completely away from the mistaken human sense and keep thought on the infinitude of good as an infinitude of divine ideas. The quote, "Man is the expression of God's being," means man is idea, the compound idea of infinite good. Man is not matter. In teaching us this, Mrs. Eddy tells us what man is and what man is not. And it is up to us to keep our thinking pure. Tracing error to its beginning reveals truth. It was Mrs. Eddy's understanding of truth that enabled her, in this age, to be the mediator between spirit and the belief of flesh, which mortals have struggled with since time began. She knew that error had a beginning. Quote, "As both mortal man and sin have a beginning, they must have an end," unquote. But tracing error to its beginning, she found only truth present. The error was always a lie about the truth. Unless a truth is there first, no lie can be told about it. So the lie always points to the truth. Beloved, now are we the sons of God. Notice now. And it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when He, the true knowledge, your oneness with infinite good, shall appear, we, you and I, the spiritual man, shall be like Him, the infinite good. And every man that hath this hope in Him purifieth himself, even as He, infinite good, is pure. Therefore man must purify his thoughts in order to overcome the illusions he entertains of matter. Our whole job is to overcome the hypnotism that makes matter look and feel real. Belief in a material basis, from which may be deduced all rationality, is slowly yielding to the idea of a metaphysical basis, looking away from matter to mind as the cause of every effect. That's from Science and Health, page 268. Consciousness, Mrs. Eddy tells us, is the essence of all existence. Perfection is the universal fact. As we become aware, become conscious of this fact of present perfection, error exits. Everything is already ours. Why is it so hard for us to accept this teaching that there is nothing to be attained, nothing to be achieved? If true consciousness were attainable, it would be apart from our own consciousness, something other than the divinely real consciousness we already have and are. Why do we set ourselves up as material entities, separate from the infinite good, God, our own mind? No corporeal creation. The answer lies in the reluctance to give up original sin. When Laura Sargent asked Mrs. Eddy, "Mother, what do you mean by sin, sin, sin?" Mrs. Eddy answered, "I mean the connubial relation." She explained, infinite good being all in all, and being masculine, feminine, and neuter, what need is there for sex? God, or infinite good, made all quite unconsciously of sex or gender. Mrs. Eddy once explained, God is father and mother, one. The Christ reflects the male and female principle, one, not two. And the end of the belief in male and female as two will be when woman stops childbearing. Sexuality and sensuality of any kind are not of God. The prophet was aware of this great truth, quote, "And Job spake and said, Let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, There is a man-child conceived." The great prophet Jeremiah lamented and said, "Cursed be the day wherein I was born. Let not the day wherein my mother bare me be the blessed. Cursed be the man who brought tidings to my father, saying, A man-child is born unto thee. Wherefore came I forth out of the womb to see labor and sorrow, that by day should be consumed with shame?" This theme runs from Genesis through Revelation. Jesus' knowledge of original sin made it possible for him to overcome all evil, and he carries this theme throughout the New Testament. Remember, he said, "Death will never cease until ye women cease your childbearing," showing his knowledge of original sin. To this, Mrs. Eddy on December 7th, 1903, added, "The end of the belief in male and female will be when woman stops childbearing." As Jesus was being led away to be crucified, Luke reports Jesus' last instruction and warning to the throng that followed, quote, "Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bear, and the paps which never gave suck." In Matthew, Jesus instructed, "Call no man your father upon the earth, for one is your father, mind, which is in heaven." Most people don't want to see it. Like the cardinal whom Galileo urged, "Come, look through my telescope and see for yourself." They reply, "But I don't want to see." They would hide behind what Mrs. Eddy was forced, by the total ignorance of her times, to write, namely, "Marriage should improve the human species." Triumphantly, and with exaggerated innocence, they insist, "You see, Mrs. Eddy wasn't against bringing children into the world." They have no idea what Mrs. Eddy was up against when, quote, "her discovery undermined the favorite inclinations of a sensuous philosophy," unquote. That's from Science and Health. Or what an incredible work lay before her to awaken mankind from the belief that man is a creator. And what an astounding achievement her fulfillment of scriptural prophecy was. To the materiality of her time, her teaching was like a lead balloon. The ignorance she had to meet was enough to drive any thinking person around the bend. Her chapter, Marriage, she tells us, saved the cause. It came where people were. Her teaching that in reality, quote, "there are no sexual organs, only in false belief. For all is created, and man or woman are not creators," was not understood. Today, however, with the dawning of woman's hour, many men and women are seeing the light, and there is a far more ready ear for the central theme of the Bible and Mary Baker Eddy's revelations, which reveal that creation is intact and will so be seen when human generation ceases. Quote, "The multiplication of a human and mortal sense of persons is not creation, it is dense blindness," unquote. Lust and sensuality are not of God. Mr. Calvin C. Hill tells how Mrs. Eddy healed him of lust and sensuality. Calvin Hill became a student of Christian Science after being healed of various maladies, the most severe of which was a case of indigestion that doctors could not help him with. Describing this particular visit with Mrs. Eddy, as recorded in We Knew Mary Baker Eddy, third series, he states, quote, "Mrs. Eddy looked at me searchingly as I put my question. 'I wish you would point me to some place in your book that will enable me to overcome the thought of lust and sensuality.' She replied most emphatically, 'I will.' I remember she lifted her head with that far-off look as though she saw into the very heart of heaven. She talked for some time, denouncing the Adam dream and thoroughly exposing its falsity. She spoke over and over again of the nothingness of mortality and of the reality of the spiritual creation. She supplanted the garment of the flesh with the robe of spirit." Explaining the second record of creation. To free us from the tyranny of birth, procreation, and death, to awaken us from the Adam dream, Mary Baker Eddy had to go back to the beginning and explain the two contradictory versions of creation recorded in Genesis. Consider, in the first record of creation, we have the male and female that God, infinite good, created in his own image and likeness. Here God is father, mother, two compounded natures in one being. So the man that infinite good made in its image and likeness is two compounded natures in one being, namely the man that is both male and female, one, both son and daughter, the compound idea of all that resembles God. His name is Christ Science. Mrs. Eddy explained that the perfection that is love, God, requires the blending of the masculine and feminine qualities in one consciousness. in your consciousness and in mine. And after our consciousness is renewed and perfect, the true image must appear. But in the second version of creation in Genesis, after there went up a mist, what do we have? We have the Adam dream creation. We have a man and a woman. We have a man, Adam, from whose rib a woman was taken. Now, can both the first and second records be true? No. Mrs. Eddy had to explain the true and false accounts in the first two chapters of Genesis, because once we see the error as error, it can be destroyed. Before the mist, or mystification, man was entirely mental, a formation of both the manhood and womanhood qualities of God. But man, not being satisfied with his degree of expression, formed a false concept of the all, of the infinite good we call God. Thus he became a prodigal from his father's house. This false concept changed his true concept of the spiritual universe and himself, namely, that spirit is the real and eternal. The false concept brought in belief a physical universe and a physical man, a mortal that creates other mortals. Chapter 9. The continuity of life. Evil and error do not exist in reality. Overcoming corporeal creation, we overcome death. If all things were made by infinite good, and without infinite good was not anything made that was made, then evil and error simply do not exist. Their seeming existence is aggressive mental suggestion only, hypnotic suggestion. When Martha of Bethany voiced the standard belief that she would see her brother Lazarus again at the last day, Jesus instantly repudiated that prevailing notion, knowing that wholeness and health were the ever-present fact. "I am the resurrection and the life," he boldly announced. "He that believeth in me," notice in me, he did not say, "he that believeth in God," but "in me." And in what I tell you, though he were dead, asleep and not aware of the facts of life, yet shall he live and be aware of himself as he really is. In reality, you now are perfect and immortal. Age is a self-imposed, cruel taskmaster. It is but the educated belief that man or existence had a beginning. Therefore, it is pure illusion. The continuity of life is the most important question in the world today, which even the medical profession is beginning to see. When will mankind wake to the great scientific fact that in heaven, mind substance is the only medium needed for all the heart yearns for? God, the mind of man, contemplates itself. Where? Within your consciousness. When the crucified Jesus lay in the rock-ribbed tomb, wasn't it his own mind, the mind he called the Father, that resurrected him? Jesus held to the true idea. He saw reality, the Christ. His constant acknowledgment of but one power exalted him, and he overcame the world. His perfect state of mind lifted him into heaven. He retained his body, his individuality, that reflected eternal life. His Christ mind had divested him of all the errors that are the opposite of the seven synonyms in Mrs. Eddy's definition of God. In his ascension, the physical man Jesus disappeared. His consciousness was no longer fettered with a physical body. He furnished conclusive proof that matter is unreal. With spiritual growth, we all will experience the same. Our totally false belief that life is in the form we see, in what we are aware of, is like looking at a calculation on the blackboard and believing it is mathematics. What a loss we would feel if someone erased it and we continued to believe that part of mathematics is gone. Mrs. Eddy states that birth and death arise only from the material sense of things, not from the spiritual. Quote, matter cannot change the eternal fact that man exists because God exists, unquote. And the transition from our lower sense of life to a new and higher sense thereof, even though it be through the door of death, yields a clearer and nearer sense of life to those who have utilized the present. Death and finiteness are unknown to life. Mortals waken from the dream of death with bodies unseen by those who think they bury the body. Death can never alarm or even appear to him who fully understands life. Jesus finished his work on earth by overcoming death and the grave. He was our example. He said he was the way. After his resurrection, his consciousness advanced beyond the concept of a physical form, and the physical Jesus disappeared. In order to show that he, Christ Jesus, had mastered all belief, he presented the same body that was buried in the tomb, thus preserving his human personality until the ascension. Resurrection was not exclusive to Jesus. When he said, "I am the resurrection," he was telling us that if we can perceive the I, capital I, within ourselves, we too will resurrect and demonstrate that the Son of God in us cannot die. Knowing this, we cannot be crucified by discord, fear, lack, loneliness, or disease. Mrs. Eddy brought the good news that the ascension comes because each higher manifestation of truth uncovers its supposititious opposite to be met and destroyed. Thus we rise step by step until we finally reach a condition which has no erroneous expression. This moment, when the material senses no longer cognize us because we have overcome their claims, we have overcome the hypnotism that has held us captive. This moment must be the ascension. To subjective sense, ascension is only expansion from earth to heaven. One young man who heard Mrs. Eddy's sermons at Hawthorne Hall wrote that Mrs. Eddy carried her listeners right to the sepulcher where Jesus stepped forth in spiritual triumph. Resurrection, as she presented it, he said, was more than history or symbol, it was present fact. It was to him, the student, like awakening from a hypnotic trance, from the Adam dream. The starting point in divine science is that heaven is here. There is no error to ascend out of, since good is all and ever present. Chapter 10. Spiritual education uncovers, destroys error. Good being real, its opposite is unreal. Quote, "The origin of evil is the problem of the ages and confronts each generation anew. It confronts Christian Science. The question is often asked, if God created only the good, whence cometh the evil? To this question, Christian Science replies that evil never did exist as an entity. It is but a belief that there is an opposite intelligence to infinite good. This belief is a species of idolatry. The admission of the reality of evil perpetuates faith in evil, and the Scriptures declare that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are. This leading self-evident proposition of Christian Science, that good being real, its opposite is necessarily unreal, needs to be grasped in all its divine requirements." Unquote. Spiritual education is necessary since one cannot correct a mistake until one knows one has made a mistake. Evil and error had a beginning only as hypnotism has a beginning, with no past and no future. It is imperative that Christian Scientists understand the origin of evil and thus rely on their own individual Christ selfhood as the Savior of the body. Blind belief can never take the place of reason. Quote, "There is nothing so detrimental to Christian Science as blind belief," unquote. Regarding the healing practice, she states, It is the healer's understanding of the operation of divine principle and his application thereof which heals the sick, just as it is one's understanding of the principle of mathematics which enables him to demonstrate its rules. It is understanding that heals, either your understanding or the understanding of the practitioner you call on. It was Mrs. Eddy's understanding that healed, and that was able to teach her students to heal just as Jesus taught his disciples to heal. She knew matter and evil, including all inharmony, sin, disease, and death, are unreal, and that God was actually the consciousness of every individual. Mrs. Eddy teaches, a false belief is both the tempter and the tempted, that which tempts the spiritual man, you and me, the sin and the sinner, the disease and its cause. If we think the illusion originates with something other than spiritual man, we have two causes, don't we? But Jesus and Mrs. Eddy firmly teach one cause only. This is the point Jesus makes in his parable of the prodigal who was a son of God. Also, after asking, whom do men say that I am? He asked, whom do ye say that I am? Implying that humanity's divinity, its oneness with God, must be understood. It is also the point Mrs. Eddy is making throughout Science and Health and her prose works. There is not a second creator that could cause matter to be something other than an illusion. Since we are the spiritual man right now, and error is the outcome of this spiritual man's wrong thinking, evil and error cannot be overcome until its origin is explained and understood. As someone has wisely said, preconceived notions, such as error's pretense of life passing as our thought, are the locks on the door to wisdom. Since we are the thinker and are the spiritual man, it is necessary for us to know that believing in matter is our mistake. Then we can correct it. If it was someone else's mistake, how could we correct it? Physician, heal thyself. How? Science and Health states, hold thought steadfastly to the enduring, the good, and the true, and you will bring these into your experience proportionably to their occupancy of your thought. Jesus said, we must change our way of thinking. In miscellaneous writings we read, one's first lesson is to learn oneself. This human self must be evangelized by abandoning so fast as practical the material. In her first three chapters, Prayer, Atonement and Eucharist, and Marriage, Mrs. Eddy dwells like a one-string fiddle on this evangelization. These chapters teach us that the seed must be sown in the good human qualities. They constitute the bridge to the spiritual and lead to the realm of the real. Quote, ignorance of self is the most stubborn belief to be overcome, for apathy, dishonesty, sin follow in its train. Unquote. Do we spend most of our lives thinking and studying about external things, when next to God, the most important knowledge we possess is about ourselves? The most inexcusable ignorance concerns the hidden enemies sheltered in our own mental household. Christian Science is telling mankind of the foe in ambush. Our constant prayer must be, cleanse thou me from secret faults. The only thing evil asks of us is to be let alone. Wouldn't we call the police if we thought a thief or assassin was in the house? Shouldn't we eliminate that which, as long as it remains in our thought, brings forth sickness, sin, and death? And shouldn't we do this house cleaning now? Error never had a real beginning. There is no past, no future. There is only the ever-present now. Mrs. Eddy once chided Clara Choate for singing, In the Sweet By and By, because she had taught Clara to realize the now of every good thing, just as we have the nowness of 2 times 2 equal 4. Since mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love are the same today as they were a million years ago, or will be a million years hence, the change must come about in us. And it can, since we possess sovereign power to think and act rightly. We alone are the attorney and judge in each case. Mrs. Eddy says the Christian Scientist is alone with his own being and with the reality of things. So what are we waiting for? Nothing but a change in ourselves. It is not a question of whether the conquest of our false nature can be accomplished, but rather, are we going to do it? Our divinity must be lived. Said our way-shower, "To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth." Again, "I have overcome the world. I have overcome material thinking." To know Him, our higher consciousness, aright, is life eternal. Mrs. Eddy maintained emphatically that only through our consciousness can something happen to us. Infinite good is omnipresent, but unless we open our consciousness to receive it, nothing of God can touch our life. Sadly, she agreed that the birthplace of civilization is not Athens, but Calvary. Infinite good can only come into our experience by a conscious act of our consciousness. To make the transit from matter to spirit, there is a price to be paid. We must consciously negate the laws of the world, and by an activity of consciousness, we become aware of the law of infinite good operating in our experience, until finally the I, that is God, so permeates human consciousness that we, like Jesus, can say, "He that seeth me, seeth him that sent me." We must reach the place where there is only the Father, our true mind, revealing itself as the Son, as what looks like you and me. Never forget, what we are looking at is God in disguise. The nature of infinite good is ours for the taking. Think of it. We are in possession of the nature of God freely bestowed upon us if we will but come out of the mesmerism of a material selfhood. Does evil or good work by itself? No. Each requires a medium through which to act. Are we agents for evil, or are we fellow workers in the gospel of Christ? We all know there is much in our thinking that should come to an end. Tares, which have for a long time been growing with the wheat, let them be garnered into bundles and burned. Problems exist only in the universal human mind.